So now we need to add about 4,000 more steps. It's about 1,000 steps every 10 minutes. So they need 40 more minutes of conscious walking. So 2 20-minute walks a day, especially if you can do it after a meal, you bring your glucose levels down, postprandial glucose levels. So after walking, then we do some cardio. And I know nobody likes to do the cardio. I don't necessarily disagree with that. It's not all that exciting. But from moving your body and circulating, I could go on and on about new cancer-based studies that I'm seeing with just literally pumping blood through your vascular system. Cancer cells cannot hold up to that. Some cancer cells will literally die from the rush of blood moving through. So it's like, it's remarkable.
Hey friends, welcome to The Good Life with Michelle Lamoureux, a show for women in midlife who want to live happier, healthier, and more meaningful lives. I'm your host, Michelle Lamoureux, a self-love coach and the author of Design a Life You Love. And together we're going to be doing just that. Each week I bring on world-class experts, best-selling authors, leading entrepreneurs, and also do solo casts with the intention of inviting you to get connected to what you really desire from your life. This show is produced with love every week. There's inspiration and actionable tips in every episode because I want to see women playing a starring role in their lives instead of living on the sidelines. Be sure to join the Good Life Community newsletter over at thegoodlifecoach.com for more inspiration and tips to live your best midlife. And make sure you're following the show on your favorite podcast player. I'm so glad that you're here. Hey, friends, and welcome back to the Good Life Podcast. I'm so excited that you are joining me today. We are going to learn about how to get fit in midlife and really look at the specific challenges because of perimenopause and menopause. Joining us today is Dr. Stephen Cabral, who's a board-certified naturopathic doctor and the founder of Equilife and the Integrative Health Practitioner Institute. When Dr. Cabral was 17 years old, he was diagnosed with a life-altering illness and given no hope for recovery. And after many years of suffering, he traveled the world and discovered how to combine ancient Ayurvedic healing practices with state-of-the-art naturopathic and functional medicine. And that's when he understood how to fully rebalance the body and re-energize it with life. Today in Dr. Cabral's practice, he and his team have completed over 250,000 client appointments using functional medicine lab testing and personalized wellness plans to help people rebalance their mind and body to recover from autoimmune, thyroid, fatigue, hormone, weight gain, digestive, and dozens of other hard-to-treat health conditions. His mission is to help people understand that there's always a reason why you've not achieved your ideal wellness or weight loss goals, and that you can and will get well again. And functional medicine, I've had other functional medicine docs in the show, really look at root cause, and they look at different health conditions with a different perspective. And I think it's important to hear those different perspectives because something you listen to may resonate and get you on your path to feeling your best. So on that note, I'm excited to dive into today's conversation, and all of the show notes will be over at thegoodlifecoach.com with links to everything we talk about. And also, while you're there, I'd love to invite you to be a part of the Good Life community by signing up for the weekly newsletter and getting more tips and inspiration to live your best midlife. On that note, let's get into the show. Here we go. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Cabral. Here we are, part three.
It's great to be here. I can't wait. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I just want to say thank you. So I'm in year five of the podcast, just for the audiences, just so they have the back history a little bit. You were my functional medicine doctor back in Boston, and you were so supportive of my podcast. You've had one forever. I don't even know what episode you're at right now. I'm at 300. You're in the thousands. And I just want to thank you for that. And you were my second guest on the show. And then you came back on for episode 80, and here we are in the 300s for year five. And I'm excited to have your expertise.
Well, you're doing amazing work. So I really, if I can help in any way, I'm glad to do that. But like I said, the work that you're doing and the information and knowledge you're putting to the world is amazing. So you got to keep it up.
You're so kind. Thank you. Well, I wanted to talk fitness with you. So Give us a little bit of your background in that space too, so women know. Because when I was trying to figure out who do I want to have on to help educate around what's happening hormonally to women in midlife, why is it that we're doing the same things, working out the same, eating the same, but suddenly our bodies don't look the same or feel the same? Mm-hmm. And how can we take control of our health for strength, longevity, health span, not just lifespan, right? And feel great again and feel really good. And a lot of the women, when I've written in about what topic they want to cover, this was a hot topic.
Yeah, 100%. This has really been my life because I played sports all through childhood. And then I tore my Achilles tendon, which I really don't talk about too much. So a lot of people probably don't know that. But I tore that the beginning of my senior year of high school. And then 2 months later, this is part of the issues around my healing as well. And then I got, very sick. And many people know about my story. Some people don't. But I was sick from 17 years old to 27 years old. Addison's disease, which is the inability to produce cortisol. Type 2 diabetes as a result of Addison's disease. And I had many, many others. But the other one that I had was an autoimmune issue called rheumatoid arthritis. So even as a teenager, I had this disease that was breaking down the joints in essentially my thumb and my elbows. I had POTS. I had horrible allergies with mast cell activation syndrome, mastocytosis. But what I wanted to do was I said, okay, if these doctors can't help me get well, because they told me that there was no real hope to get well, that I just had to manage these diseases, that I said, okay, if I can't fix the inside of my body, I at least want to work on the outside. And so after I tore my Achilles tendon, I couldn't do basketball, I couldn't do cross country, I couldn't do track, I couldn't do all these things that I enjoyed doing, I said, I'm going to start going to the gym. And it was literally to preserve sanity. That's it. Like, I needed an outlet. So like, that's just somewhat the tip of mind I have. I have to be doing something. And so I began actually exercising. I loved it. I didn't know what I wanted to do in college. Became a certified nutritionist, became a certified personal trainer to help maybe heal myself. But honestly, it's what I love to do. So that's really my background. And I loved personal training, loved a nutritionist. And the truth is, I don't think they've ever stopped being, quote unquote, a certified conditioning specialist or a personal trainer. I've just morphed it into my work as a board certified doctor of naturopathy and an integrative health practitioner. So it's all part of the overall healthy lifestyle. And I think exercise is a big part of that.
Absolutely. And I am curious to get the functional medicine perspective. So I've had a lot of traditionally trained, just, amazing OBGYNs, docs come on, talk about the impacts of hormones and how that's impacted what's happening to our body. And we've gotten educated. But I'm curious if there's a different lens that someone with functional medicine training looks at what's happening from a hormonal stance.
I've looked at it differently over the different, let's call it, like, stages of my education. And so in the beginning, as a personal trainer, nutritionist, let's say that a woman came to me and she wanted to lose 20, 30 pounds. So we've worked with hundreds of thousands of people in our practice. And like, that's typical. Like, I want more energy. I want to improve my mood. Yeah. I want to improve my libido. I want to lose 20 to 30 pounds and kind of tone up overall. That's like 80% of people that we've worked with before. And they're like, yeah, that's kind of what most people want. So as a personal trainer, what can I do? I can help you with exercise, or that's going to help with strength training. And I can help you with nutrition. And that's going to help with the weight loss and then an appropriate amount of protein, appropriate amount of carbs and fats to help you with that process. Because we know that even if we're training with weights, what can happen is if we can't out-train a bad diet, right? And so we have to make sure that we have the appropriate diet for us. But too many women, unfortunately, eat too little, and especially too little carbohydrates, increasing cortisol levels, which breaks down muscle mass over time, just a little bit over time, but it adds up to a lot. That lowers the thyroid, lowers the metabolism, and it can actually put them into menopause, or what looks like menopause, early because of not quite full-blown amenorrhea, but because of high levels of cortisol, stress hormone, creating low levels of progesterone, which then causes a cessation of their cycle, or sporadic. And so there are three main phases. There is premenopausal, but there can be premenopausal with a cessation of your cycle. I mean, like, you're not ready to be in menopause yet, but because of stress, over dieting, over exercise, etc., you moved into that phase. Then there's perimenopause, people have different classifications, but okay, now you may have gone 12 months without your period. Okay, now that's considered menopause, but your hormones haven't regulated yet to a lower level. You have highs and lows, maybe even some intermittent spotting, although some people might say that that doesn't actually count then as menopause. And then we have menopause or postmenopause, where now your hormonal levels have leveled out essentially at a low point. And so if you've probably gone over this many times, I'm happy to break that down or move on to what we do through each phase in order to help women decrease symptoms and improve overall, not just body transformation, truthfully, because it's not just about body transformation, it's about overall health of the individual.
Absolutely. So I think it would be great to focus on what's happening to us hormonally that's causing the weight gain, especially around the midsection, and an inability almost to lose weight, it feels like. It's harder.
Without a doubt, it is harder. And part of that is that the hormones, and let's kind of go through them. I'm sure most people are somewhat familiar, but we have estrogen that we're talking about. We have progesterone. We have DHEA. We have testosterone. And then we won't necessarily talk about cortisol and thyroid yet because they deserve their own discussion. But for women, it's actually really important, whether you're using all natural foods, whether you're using natural herbs and supplements, or whether you're doing hormone replacement therapy, it's not just about adding more. It's actually about keeping them in ratio. So your estrogen and your progesterone, you will never feel completely well or lean or energized if your estrogen to progesterone ratios are not balanced. So there are specific ratios that each one needs to be in, with estrogen being a fraction of what progesterone is supposed to be. And then after that, throughout life, we want our DHEA between what's called a 6 and an 18, just in terms of our units. Most women, by the time they get to menopause, it's a 2. And so it's very, very low. And that means that DHEA, which is actually a precursor for testosterone, and your natural estrogen production, there's just not enough of the raw material there to make more. And why does that matter? Because testosterone actually matters a lot for women. Although it might be 1/5, 1/6 of what men produce, it is crucial in terms of improving protein, well, overall utilization for when you work out with weights, your ability to recover, your ambition, your drive, your libido, and overall metabolism. And so we want estrogen, progesterone, DHEA, and testosterone to all be looked at. Because only looking at one number to get rid of night sweats or to get rid of whatever it might be isn't the way that we want to look at a healthy, balanced body.
Okay. So when the estrogen literally falls off a cliff, as one doctor described it in menopause, in perimenopause, as you mentioned, it's fluctuating and then it's basically going to nothing. You know, and the progesterone is following suit. Apparently, the testosterone sticks around and can fluctuate. What is that specifically doing, though? Is it impacting our metabolism along with all the other things it's causing, like the hot flashes and night sweats, the joint pain, and everything else that comes along with it?
Yes, because of its way that it also helps to modulate inflammation. And so when we look at estrogen and progesterone, so we need both, again, in proper ratio, because if we don't have the same quality of skin. And by that, I mean that glow to the skin, the thickness of the skin, and also not allowing the skin to sag as much. So for women in our practice specifically that we speak with, it's the thinning of the hair or the quality of the hair, skin, nails. And for the breasts, they won't have the same, they'll be basically sagging a little bit more. That's muscles in general. And why does that matter? Because we actually want to balance those estrogen levels, not bring them back to when you were 16 years old. That's not necessarily the goal, but to bring back healthy levels. And most doctors will tell you that it just drops off to zero. It's actually not zero. So it's important to look at that. But it's very important because DHEA is going to be the substrate or the precursor to producing your own natural estrogen and allowing then more progesterone to be produced. So when the ovaries are stopping, the adrenals are helping. And then what we can do is not necessarily, again, create a surge. We don't want a surge in estrogen or progesterone, but we want enough. We want it for natural protection. And we want it also for the bones, the hair, the skin, the nails, and overall metabolism, as well as that little thing that I mentioned, inflammation, helping to modulate healthy inflammation as we age.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit more? Nobody's really talked about DHEA. What exactly is DHEA and what role does it play in the body?
So DHEA is short for dihydroepiandrosterone. And when we look at the sex hormones chart, we basically have cholesterol that's predominantly made in the liver. Some of it obviously comes from our food. It moves down to pregnenolone, and then it either shifts over towards progesterone and cortisol. And we'll talk about that because that's actually important, because we could produce more progesterone if the body is actually in a lot more stress. And then over on the other side, we have DHEA to testosterone to estrogen. And estrogen is three forms. So we have estradiol, and we have, what's my other one? Estrone.
There
we
go. Only, exactly. I just had a neurologist on. She just taught me about that one. I wouldn't have known otherwise. I literally just...
No, that's great.
Yeah.
You saved me there.
Yeah.
And so when we look at those, actually the one that has been shown to be over and over most protective during menopause and beyond, meaning like for the rest of a woman's life, is estriol. So even though it's a small percentage of total estrogen, very protective in terms of breast cancer and other forms. So some women will actually get compounded triest or just three forms of estrogen or just estriol and use that actually as a topical for the breasts. And so that isn't something that we use in our practice or do in our practice, but I will just say, I like to be integrative and I'll say, okay, this has actually been shown to be fairly advantageous for women that are at least worried about breast cancer. So getting back though to the progesterone and estrogen balance, you can actually use DHEA at a low dosage. I want to step back. I would run a lab test called the stress, mood, and metabolism test.
What is it?
Stress, mood, and metabolism. So what it does, it looks at the sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, DHEA, testosterone. Mm-hmm. Then it looks at cortisol throughout the day. It looks at your thyroid, but your free T4, free T3, TSH, doctors usually just run TSH, TPO antibodies. Then it looks at vitamin D and your insulin levels. Why this is important is that if you have low levels of cortisol in the morning and you have high levels of cortisol in the evening, you are not, no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to properly balance those hormones, because your body is always going to feel exhausted in the morning, because cortisol is actually what gives us that little boost of energy in the morning. And then in the evening, we want that low so that our body begins to recover overnight. When women use hormone replacement therapy, they mask that. And so basically what you did is you took the pendulum, which was all the way over here, feeling tired, exhausted, retaining water, puffy, and then you swing it all the way the other way by supplementing with estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, maybe even some HGH. So now you're like, oh, I feel fantastic. But the problem is you're covering up everything that is imbalanced, and over time that will catch up with you. So what we like to do is say, you choose what you want to do. First, let's get a baseline of where you're at. That's what that lab test does. Then we can use herbs if we want for progesterone and estrogen. There are certain herbs that will help to boost those. And DHEA, which will then naturally boost testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, right? Because it's a precursor. And then save your body then to use the hormone that you're producing to get older for cortisol. So this does a couple things, because if you just start with only 5 milligrams of DHEA twice a day, that's it. Why does the only 5 milligrams matter? Because in the scientific literature, they're typically doing 50 milligrams or 100 milligrams. We're starting with 10 milligrams a day total. So then what we do is we retest the labs after, let's say, 8 weeks or so. And we say, okay, what did 10 milligrams do per day, potentially adding in those herbs as well, estrogen support, progesterone support? Like, not only did it move the needle just a little bit, I actually feel good now. So remember, you don't want to over-supplement or over-hormone replace if you don't need to. So the goal always is the lowest possible dose to get you the maximum amount of results. And if you do that throughout your whole life, maybe in 5 years, you need to go from 5 milligrams twice a day to 10 milligrams twice a day. Okay, 5 years from now. But we have these labs in order to be able to see where we move the needle slowly and steadily. So I'm in my mid-40s right now. When my testosterone starts to really dip, I'm hoping that I can keep it there to, let's say, early 60s. That's what I've been able to see in my practice. I will personally be using DHEA instead of hormone replacement therapy.
Okay. It's interesting. And tell me, should we start with sleep or what we should be doing for strength training? Because I feel like sleep is the foundation. So you tell me where you think we should start. Because when you're talking about cortisol and stress levels, I'm thinking, well, if you're starting out at night, not having the best rest, and your body, you know, you've got hot flashes and night sweats, and you're like tossing and turning and not getting that good sleep, the deep sleep and the REM sleep, and you're waking up fatigued, you may not feel like eating well, you may not feel like exercising, you know, it just sets you up. So you tell me, should we start there, do you think, or do
100%. Yeah. Okay, and the reason is that there. Even premenopausal, we'll work with a woman. She'll be, let's say, 25 years old, and she's having fertility issues. She's some of her cycles are 21 days, others are 35 days, and she's not able to regulate it. Well, we look at those cortisol levels. Cortisol levels are elevated. Thyroid levels are now, TSH is elevated, but free thyroid is low. She has, let's just say, normal estrogen that we typically see, but very low progesterone. The problem is when you take those same issues, so that's dysregulated cycle, you take those same issues into menopause, and what happens is you are continuing to plummet your own natural hormone production because of higher levels of stress. So if we're increasing stress in the body, which is strength training, it's a good stress, right? But it's still a stress. Or if we're increasing fasting, we're decreasing carbohydrates. We're basically telling the body, we're going to put in less fuel and we're going to make you expend more fuel. And how do you think you're going to feel, right? It's like, it's not ideal. And so we can do that if we begin to balance though more sleep, and we do something called reverse dieting. And reverse dieting is, just because I'm saying that you should eat carbohydrates, if you have eaten carbohydrates for years, right, or you're on a 50 gram of carb per day diet, you can't just go to 150 grams a day. Yes, you will gain weight. Like, that's not ideal. But what we do is we slowly over time, we begin to add back in those healthy carbs. Now, carbohydrates act as a buffer for stress hormones, namely cortisol, and you begin to sleep better, you begin to recover better, your blood sugar levels, believe it or not, can begin to become more balanced, and life is good. So we it's all part of the plan. Yes.
Okay. Talk to us. I've been hearing so much about getting that morning light, helping your circadian rhythm get regulated, or I don't know what the right word is, so that your body knows it's morning and it knows it's time to sleep. Tell us, what's the right way to do that? I keep just hearing so much about this and the importance.
So during certain times of the day, the actual wavelengths of the sun are absorbed differently with the body. So more of the red light, right, that we're trying to receive into the body, and blue light as well in the morning, but they're just the way that which you get it is the timing of the day. So in an ideal world, we are getting morning sun between 6 and 8 a.m. Now, during the winter months, the sun might not rise till a little bit later. So you have a play of about 90 minutes, depending on the season. And there is actually some decent truth in literature to going to bed a little later in the summer and sleeping in a little bit more in the winter. But I don't like to throw out people's schedules, because we do try to keep a normal schedule. But as humans, we are diurnal beings. And when we look at lab tests, you actually see, and I'll just give you the units because I think this will make this most sense. See, on the same stress metabolism test, the amount of cortisol you want to produce between 6 and 8 a.m. when you're taking your first saliva sample is between 6 and 9 units. Okay. At lunchtime, it's about 2 to 3 units. Right before dinner, 1 to 2 units. Before bed, 0.5 units. So when we look at that, and you add up the rest of the day, they still don't equal 6 to 8 a.m. in the morning, right? So that is, if your cortisol is working properly, you wake up with energy, you wake up, and an hour or two later, you have an appetite, you're ready for breakfast. And part of that is the blocking of melatonin from being produced. So cortisol can actually begin to elevate. And one of the ways that you can drop melatonin is exposing your body to light, especially sunlight. So if you can't, I have in my room a wake light. And so if I'm waking up before the sun, well, my wake light, which is an alarm clock, gradually gets brighter every minute for 30 minutes. And that can then allow me to wake up more naturally, which helps the thyroid and helps the cortisol, while at the same time stopping melatonin-based production, which leaves you groggy and feeling like you're basically half asleep.
Okay. So when you wake up with that light, do you feel great? Like, are you just like, yeah, it's morning, I'm ready. Is that you?
100%. And I try to wake up naturally. So I wake up between 5:30 and 6 a.m. in the morning. And that is for multiple reasons. One, and we might have talked about this before, but I liked 1 hour to myself before my daughters wake up and my wife. And so that basically is my 1 hour, and the rest of the day is it's their time and it's my work's time. And so I kind of say, great, that's their time until the end of the day. Then that's my exercise and family time again. And so I like to wake up during that time. Now I need to work back 8 hours, obviously, to go to bed. But if your alarm clock goes off and you're in the middle of REM sleep, you're going to wake up groggy. You're just going to wake up feeling terrible. And if your alarm clock is like an air raid siren, you're going to wake up with high levels of cortisol. Like, oh, what's going on? So it's not a good way to start your day. So mine is the wake light. I think it's just Philips wake light. Wakes you up gradually. Yeah. And then it's birds tripping. So if I'm still not awake by 6 a.m., the birds will start tripping. And hey, the birds are out. It's time to wake up.
So are you trying to get outside, or you use your wake light and you just get started? You know, there's this idea that you're supposed to get outside and expose your body.
Well, there's a couple parts to that. So I lived in Boston for the majority of my life, and it might be 18 degrees without wind chill, right? For many, many months. You know that. And so
I do know this.
That's not happening. But I do have what is called it's 10,000 lux light. It is only about a foot tall by about 8 inches wide, and it's a stand. So the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning is I just put a little water in my face, brush my teeth. I'm a big believer, since I had Addison's disease, and I should state with people now, I no longer have any disease. At 27 years old, my mentor helped me to figure out how to figure out these underlying root causes and heal. And of course, that's what I've tried to do ever since, is pay that back and pay that forward. So the wake light is right on a stand on my sink. I just click that on, and as I'm getting ready, it's simulating the sun, because in Boston, the sun might not rise till 8 a.m. I'm up at 6. So that really helps with seasonal affective disorder as well. So I'll just use that during the winter months. During the late spring, summer, early fall, I have just the window. I have a window in my bathroom, and I'm getting that natural light coming in.
Okay, I love it. I think it's helpful, and I think it's interesting. You know, some of the curiosity I had, I said, I'm just going to put some of these questions in today, because you research more than anyone I know. Like, it's unbelievable. You must be on PubMed every day for hours. Okay, so let's shift. So let's say, so any other things you want to add about like how to get that good sleep? Anything else you want to add to that? Yeah.
Have you spoken about the 3-2-1 formula on your show yet?
No.
So I really like the 3-2-1 formula. This has helped me out a lot. I don't like to consider myself rigid, but I like to take my brain out of the equation. So I just like guidelines. And so I just set little alarms in my phone. So 3-2-1 is 3 hours before bed, make sure you've stopped eating. So I just have a simple rule for myself, because I could eat all night, just like anybody else. It's like, oh, you know, there's some whatever, there's some crackers, there's some whatever, and like you could snack on them. So 3 hours before bed, no more food. 2 hours before bed, no more water. 1 hour before bed, no more blue light. And so it's a very simple formula, but just using that myself has been a great guideline. Now, by 8 o'clock at night, though, putting my daughters to bed, I turn down all of the lights in the house. So as they're getting ready for bed, I do the same for them. So they have a salt lamp in their room, so it's an amber light. I turn off all the lights, like to my office, to everything. My phone automatically switches, but about 90 minutes before bed, I don't need to be on my phone anymore, so I'm off my phone. And I'm reading. Like, so if I want to do something before bed, I like to do a little bit of breath work, calm my nervous system. And I like to do a little reading. And so that's about it. The 3-2-1 formula has been really helpful. There's, of course, great nutritional supplements that you can use, but I also like to be lifestyle plus the supplements. The supplements are easy, but the lifestyle is a little bit more challenging. So I like to integrate both.
Okay. Any particular supplements for menopausal or perimenopausal women who are experiencing those sleepless nights because of a lot of the symptoms that come with it?
Hormones, we use estrogen support, progesterone support, and DHEA. So like very straightforward for what we use. The DHEA is 5 milligrams twice a day. After you run your stress metabolism test again, 8 weeks after being on them, if your estrogen and progesterone aren't as high as you'd like them to be. Now, again, the numbers don't as matter as much about what we talked about in the very first 5 minutes of the show, which is bioindividuality. If you feel great, you don't need higher numbers. Like that's the thing. It's like, there's no special number that you need to be at. And so then, so you have that. Now for sleep, magnesium. So we use a product called full spectrum magnesium. The second one, so that helps with calming the nervous system. getting calcium to where it needs to be. So the K2 and all those great things. And then what we also use is a product called Adrenal Soothe that helps with high levels of cortisol and the nervous system as well with the magnesium. So that's L-theanine, phosphoserine, ashwagandha, a lot of great products to bring down those high levels of cortisol at night. And the last one we use is a liquid melatonin. Liquid melatonin gets in your system faster and out of your system faster, so you're not groggy in the morning. It's the same one. I've been using that for years now, and I don't need a lot of it. Yeah. But it helps people who have a hard time turning their mind off at night, which has always been me. It's funny because there some of these things, there are genetic components, but never let genetics be your destiny, right? So my wife can fall asleep in minutes. My oldest daughter can fall asleep in minutes. One of my brothers could fall asleep in minutes. We shared a room growing up. It takes me hours to fall asleep. To turn that to kind of, I always equate it as I'm revving my engine all day and it just takes a while to cool down that engine. I'm not saying it's better than or worse than, it just sometimes it is what it is. And so by me just using a small amount, 2.5 milligrams of melatonin, which is a small amount, I fall asleep within 10 minutes every night. So it's a really remarkable thing. And that's all that I need. And that's just that little bit to say, oh, it's bedtime. Turn off those cortisol levels. And so that's been very helpful for me.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think we have a hummingbird nest right outside our door. And she's revved up, you know, in the way they fly around and hover. But when she's got two little babies in that nest right now. And it's so interesting for her to be able to, she's like such a good teacher to just watch, but she's just so calm when she's there as in her mama energy. I don't know. It just made me think, you know, we need to find that way to rev down. It's because a lot of us can rev up.
Yes, exactly. The breath work, the meditations, all of those things. I completely agree. That especially for dopamine, right? Like every time we look at our phone, well, dopamine at social media. So especially towards the evening, we need to turn off the excitatory neurotransmitters like dopamine and turn on the inhibitory ones, which is serotonin that leads to melatonin production and GABA, which is the anti-anxiety. So all of the lifestyle, not watching the news late at night, the, you know, the scary car crash, you know, scenes on TV and whatever else it might be. And more, finding a book that you find enjoyable, journaling about things you're looking forward to in the future, gratitude, and just that 3-2-1 I found to be very helpful.
I love it. The one is important, getting off that phone. That's huge because I think a lot of us have it as our alarm clocks and then we're just tempted. We get bored or, we want that hit because we get addicted to it. Okay, so talk to us. There's a lot of talk right now in terms of the nutritional aspects of tons of protein. So I'm hearing a lot of stuff women need. And I don't want to get this wrong. So, but I'm almost, and you correct me if, because you've probably heard what some of the, I don't want to name docs who are talking about this stuff, but like 1 gram of protein per, was it 1 pound
of body weight?
Yeah, it is that. Okay. Yeah. That's what my understanding is. And I'm not getting anything close to that. Thoughts on that or ways to use nutrition the right way to fuel? I mean, you're mentioning eating carbs. You don't hear that often either, except the last time you were on the show. Yeah.
Well, so the thing is, we in Western-based culture, we prize how a person looks more than anything else, right? I mean, that's honestly, like, if we're like, nobody wants to say that, but it's still the truth.
Yeah.
And I don't think it should be. But so when someone is saying, this is the best diet, it's because it makes you the thinnest. But that, let's keep in mind, does not equate to longevity or necessarily great health. And so I always like to tell people, I just ask them, when you come to me, what are we trying to optimize for? Tell me really what you want. Because if you want great energy, well, I don't think it's completely omitting carbohydrates from your diet. Like, what about your fast fuel source? What about this, this, and this? And then it's also respecting bioindividuality. If a person is more of an ectomorph body type or a Vata, where they lose weight, if they don't watch what they eat, they lose weight. That's basically a Vata or an ectomorph. Then there's the other side of that, the Kapha or the endomorph. If they don't watch what they eat, they gain weight. All right. And then we've got the mesomorph in the middle that could go either way, a little bit easier for them to gain muscle. There's a lot of other things, of course, that go along with this. So first of all, we need to think about like this. All right. The ectomorph, more catabolic. They lose muscle more easily. That would be more like yourself, right? Then we've got the endomorph. Well, they can gain mass much more easily. All right. What is protein? Protein's an anabolic food. Okay. Does the endomorph really need more protein to put on more muscle mass. No, that's probably not the issue, right? Like theirs is more of a metabolic issue. Their metabolism just isn't moving fast enough. Where the Vata, the ectomorph, their metabolism is moving really quick. Is protein going to calm those stress hormones of metabolism? No, carbohydrates are. Now they still need protein, but here's the thing. Why the 1 gram per pound of body weight? I use that for over a decade. And here's why. You get all the amino acids you need. So it's helping you to build more muscle. It's displacing carbohydrates, which help the body to, when you look at it, it's like literally carbohydrate. You hold some water when you consume them, but it's also a preferred fuel source for the body. People will try to twist it and tell you that ketones are. It's not the case at all. It takes more energy, more minerals, and also you still can't use them in a fight or flight, high stress-based mode when your body produces cortisol, glucocorticoids. It needs glycogen, so it needs glucose. It needs to break those down. If it's not in your liver, it's going to break it down from your muscles. And now, if you're being honest, the research shows that those people on a high protein and or high fat, low carbohydrate diet have a greater increase in all-cause mortality. So I want to just state this. Protein is very important. It is. But that doesn't mean that it's more important than carbohydrates and healthy fats. It is, when you come back to it, always comes down to a balanced bio-individual diet. Some people will do great on 250, 300 grams of carbs a day. Some people, 50 to 100. And we can use the protein in there. We can use other things. But do you need 1 gram per pound of body weight? Not even close. Like not meaning, can you? Sure, you can. But you don't need that. That is not, unless you're trying to do complete body transformation, that is the easiest way then to do it. The last caveat to this is, after the age of 65, most people need a little bit more protein. Why? Because they're more catabolic. So their body needs more amino acids to keep the muscle mass on. Now, you can't just eat more protein without doing a couple of days of strength training per week, because that's not necessarily going to work. But that is, I always say this, I have no dog in the race. All I care about is helping people to get well. I don't have a book on, you know, eating more protein, eating less protein. It really is bio-individualized. And I wish that dieting did not have anything to do with marketing, because all we're trying to do is find the right diet for the right individual. And at the end of the day, it really comes back to a Mediterranean style diet, which is the best studied diet for overall health. People will immediately rebut, well, you're promoting eating bread and pasta then? No, I'm not promoting eating bread and pasta with every meal. What I'm saying is the longest lived people follow some type of Mediterranean with maybe an Asian style influence to it in terms of certain vegetables and things like that, legumes. And then 7 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. If you don't do well with fruit, mainly vegetables, getting in enough fiber, enough healthy protein, probably a little bit more from fish, if we're being honest. And then good healthy fats that come from olive oil, olives, of course, some nuts and seeds, and avocados. And if you follow that, now you can have the best of both worlds. Transform your body and also hopefully increase your lifespan as well.
Okay, this is great. And talk to us about actually like the lifting weight. So there's also this now, this push. I see a lot of women out there talking about you got to lift heavy. I think women first need to just start lifting. I don't know about lifting heavy. I when you haven't been cultivating that, you know, that feels like another barrier in my opinion. So thoughts on just strength training in general. What are your thoughts on this idea that we need to lift heavy as this? There's always these like, I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
It's the pendulum. Fads.
It is the pendulum. It's like, yeah, it's let's just get people moving and lifting some weights. I don't know. Do we need to lift heavy? If we do, tell us.
Yes. The problem is that you will never gain a massive social media following without saying something all the way to the other side of the pendulum, right?
Yep.
So what I say is like balance. Create dynamic equilibrium in the body. But I'm not, that's because I'm not making this stuff up either. Meaning like it's been taught for 6,000 years in Ayurvedic medicine. It was then moved on to traditional Chinese medicine. And then every form of medicine in the world adopted these things, bioregulatory medicine, et cetera. And all we're doing is bringing it to modern times. That's it. We're combining ancient wisdom with state of the art now lab testing. And so I completely agree with you. We have something called a graduated exercise program or protocol. You don't need to do anything if you're not walking. So walk, 7,500 to 10,000 steps per day. Yeah. That is a low barrier to entry. And if I understand some people can't walk for certain reasons, like injuries, et cetera. All right, let's hop on a bike. Like that, we do what we can with what we have. Like that's basically the bottom line. But that equates to about 90 minutes of being on your feet per day. And so it's what we find in our practice is the average person does about 3,500 steps per day left to their own devices. That's basically it, right? Okay, so now we need to add about 4,000 more steps. It's about 1,000 steps every 10 minutes. So they need 40 more minutes of conscious walking. So 2 20-minute walks a day, especially if you can do it after a meal, you bring your glucose levels down, postprandial glucose levels. So after walking, then we do some cardio. And I know nobody likes to do the cardio. I don't necessarily disagree with that. It's not all that exciting. But from moving your body and circulating, I could go on and on about new cancer-based studies that I'm seeing with just literally pumping blood through your vascular system. Cancer cells cannot hold up to that. Some cancer cells will literally die from the rush of blood moving through. So it's like, it's remarkable. Okay. After that, body weight training. Why body weight training? Because if you can't control your own body and nervous system, you have no business lifting heavy. And then after that, we can move on to strength training. So when we look at that, you said you were how old? 50?
53.
So 53. So let's say that you're going to live to 100 years old, 103 years old for easy math. So we have 50 more years. That means that you don't need to rush through this graduated exercise protocol. You could take 6 months to a year to just, I'm going to get my 7,500 to 10,000 steps a day, right? So it's like, you don't need to do 7,500 tomorrow if you're doing 3,500 today like most people do. Do 4,500. It's 10 more minutes of walking. And then, okay, great. I'm going to do cardio. How many times a week? 2 to 3. Okay, great. Then I'm going to add in the strength training. And for most people, I just say cardio, strength, cardio, strength. And we used to have more days off a week and all those things. The truth is, if you can pick one time a day just for 30 minutes, and that's the time that you do it, now it's part of your schedule. It's too hard to go, oh, day off. Is this the right day? Is this not the right day? Choose one day off if you want, and then just kind of alternate. And don't make them grueling workouts.
Yeah.
Work your way up and so that you're not sore and tired the next day.
Okay. I love this. And zone two, is that walking fast? I'm also, a lot of people talking zone two. Is that what that really is?
Everybody's talking zone two now. Yeah.
And so it's all funny. About zone two.
Zone two is the cardio. So
that's
zone
literally
two is the
cardio. Okay.
It's steady state. Like it's the steady state to keep, let's look at it this way. We can give people the equation if they want to do it. It's 220 minus your age. And then it's 60 to 70% of that. It's basically 70% of that.
Okay.
So we could say, you know, your age would be 220, 170, 167, right? And then you would just multiply that by 0.7. And that would basically be the heart rate you would stay around.
That you want to get to zone two. Okay. Yeah. So, okay.
So that could be an incline walk. It could be a brisk walk, a light jog, and that's going to get you that zone two. And zone two has really great longevity-based benefits. Now it's the opposite of HIIT training where you're in, you're in zone four or five. But that's different, right? So those are bike sprints that can be done after your weight workout or more of a high intensity interval. But you're more likely to get injured during high intensity interval training than you are during your cardio and then your body weight. So I did, I literally have done, 20,000, 30,000, personal training sessions with people. So like I get it. And everybody wants to start doing like the TRX and kettlebell swings and all that. You're going to get injured if you don't start with the basics. And so start with the basics. Your walk, your lunges. I mean, before you can do a walking lunge, do regular lunges, right? Get your balance, work on those things, squats, reaches for your Romanian deadlifts. They're all important. Work on those and then gradually move up. You'll be so much better off. The truth is you also won't plateau that way. That's why we've been doing this for a long time. So it's like, if you jump right into strength training, well, what's the next thing when you plateau? Like harder strength training. So work your way up to that. It'll be dramatic.
Yeah, create that foundation. So what advice would you give to a woman who's, let's say, 60, and she's not able to get that weight off the midsection? Is everything we're talking about, is this what's going to get her there?
The whole de-stress protocol.
Yeah.
Diet, exercise, stress reduction, toxin removal, rest, which is the sleep we spoke about earlier, the emotional balance, the scientifically backed supplements, and the success mindset. And so that's what we've used in our practice to help people with now for 25 years. I didn't know it back that many years ago, but for a good 15 years, it's exactly what we've been doing. And the reason is that nobody's perfect. Neither am I. So I don't have to be perfect on my diet, perfect on my exercise, perfect on my sleep. if I'm doing 80% of all of those, right? You can still get all the results you want. But if you're not, if your sleep's not dialed in, your stress isn't dialed in, you're not doing anything for detox from all of the, I mean, think about all the chemicals in the environment that raises women's estrogen levels, but doesn't raise their progesterone, right? It's like, okay, well, that's a disaster. And you retain water, you get headaches, you get breakouts, all these different things. So then you have to be perfect on your diet. And even then it still may not work. So that's too stressful. That just adds more stress and honestly more underlying root cause issues. So I like a more holistic approach, not with an H, but a WH, right? Holistic. So you look at the entire body, and that is ultimately the best way and the easiest way then to maintain results over time.
Okay. This has been so good. Just quickly, more fads, cold plunging and sauna. Thumbs up, thumbs down. I know you love sauna. You have one in your house.
Yeah. Sauna is great for almost every human alive. You have to be careful. Obviously, if you're pregnant, we're not going to recommend the sauna. If you have high blood pressure, it helps with that, but you'd be careful, right? Because you can raise it while you're in it. So there's a few contraindications, but not a whole lot. You can, again, graduate exercise protocol, set it for 140 degrees. If you haven't done it before, go in for 5 minutes. Go in when you start to feel like it's a bit much. And then just work up by a minute a week. Like, again, you have 50 years, right? You've got some time to do this.
Pace yourself. You have
40 more years.
It's
pace yourself
message.
Because you're going to get to wherever you want to be. But the worst thing is if you take yourself out of the game.
Okay.
Now, cold plunge is not for everyone. That's and the reason is, let's think about it. When you jump into that cold plunge, immediately you go, takes your breath away. And the reason is this, even though the results from PubMed, as you stated, are at 56 degrees, you can get results at 56 degrees. What is everybody doing in the cold plunge at? 37 degrees? Because that's the coldest you can get it, right? So it's a competition to see how cold it can be. Well, why? What's the competition? What prize do you get for
doing
the
cold? They're throwing all the ice in there. Yeah. It's like
that's
the ice
right. Breaking the ice to get in.
They're living in it
so
for 5 minutes.
When you look at it, one of the benefits of cold plunge is that it increases adrenaline and norepinephrine. Okay. So you get a temporary response from the immune system, but who is that great for? It's great for people low mood, low energy, more towards depression, can be phenomenal. It wakes that body up. It surges adrenaline in the body. Who's it not good for? People that are chronic fatigue, ectomorph, worn out, higher anxiety, all those people.
Yeah.
Unless, let me tell you, unless you don't do it first thing in the morning, because you don't want it, you don't need the spike in cortisol. I don't need a spike in cortisol.
That's
I don't need a spike in dopamine.
Yeah, I'm already.
That's
like,
right.
You
don't need more of a surge, but it will help those people if, and this is never talked about, if you're able to enter the water and go.
You're doing an exhale just for people who are listening. He's doing a gradual exhale.
Calm the nervous system and be able then to deal with the stress of the cold and buffer that, keeping the sympathetic nervous system or fight or flight from engaging. If you can do that now, you're learning how to deal with stress. Your nervous system is staying in that parasympathetic, and that's going to be able to help you throughout life and throughout your day. But they never teach breath work and keeping your parasympathetic low. It's more like fight through it. You work with it, like work with the pain. So it's the same thing. Instead of working up in steps, you're working down in temperature. 50, 60 degrees, you know, and then 58 degrees and then 56 and just... but working with your breath work. And there's lots of videos that will teach you how to do that.
I love it. Is there anything I didn't ask today that you want to leave the audience with?
There's so much when it comes to this field. It's just, I won't say this, and I'm not speaking about anybody in particular. Whenever anything is just so far to the left or to the right, it's almost always wrong. Now, there's a grain of truth, and it will get you short-term results. Keto, short-term results. Carnivore, short-term results. Check out the literature on both of those. Horrible early cause mortality, meaning like it increases all cause mortality. This isn't me saying that. If the carnivore diet was the answer, we would be having a conversation right now about the carnivore diet because I have no dog in the race and it does not matter to me. I would be like, yes, we all need to eat more ribeyes wrapped in bacon. And I would say that's great for everybody. But since that's not actually what proven out in the long-term literature, I can't recommend that. And because if I wouldn't recommend it to my parents and my wife, and my family and people in my private practice, I can't recommend it to the world. So if anything is so far out there, keep in mind that there are people like yourself, Michelle, there are hundreds of thousands of great health practitioners and doctors that they didn't miss it. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, and I'm not doing that to be like from an ego perspective where I was like, they didn't miss it. Like they see the same literature, they're not recommended. They're in their private practice because they run the labs and they see what it does to people's bodies. And so all I urge is just a little bit of skepticism, which I think is good in general with social media. And don't do anything with short-term results that will hurt you in the long term. That's basically it. Take just a little bit longer. Instead of 3 weeks of results, you'll get it over 3 to 4 months, 12 to 16 weeks. And if you can wait that long, then you're going to be able to maintain it easier and you're going to be able to make the right short and long-term decision for your health.
Absolutely. Just quickly, Ozempic, I mean, it's a bigger conversation, but is there a place for it?
Yeah. I have a whole podcast on Ozempic.
So give us the link on that. So maybe that's the way to go because it's too big of a topic. But now that Oprah's put it out there, I think, I don't know if that's one she's on. I think, you know, people are curious, is that an option for them if they're really struggling?
Yeah, there's Wegovy, Ozempic, et cetera.
Yeah, so I'll find the link.
I'm not against anything that will help people. I'm really not. But let's just share with people the potential side effects. And that is gastroparesis. That is literally difficulty digesting a meal in food, constipation, GI issues, SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and more. So just know that this isn't just scot-free using this. Potential hair loss, disruption in hormones. So I just want us to keep that in mind. And also, taking the Ozempic never figures out why your body was gaining the weight. And I think that that's a disservice that we're doing to people because there's obviously an inflammatory component. Okay, what was it? Was it imbalanced estrogen and progesterone? Well, it doesn't fix the estrogen dominance. What was it, the low DHE? What was it, the high cortisol at night? Was it the low thyroid from a functional medicine perspective? And you never fix that? Because I'm not saying that Ozempic doesn't work. You'll lose about up to 26 pounds or so per year, right? And so it's like, it's not that it does not work. It works. And so is there a time and place? Yeah, there's a time and place, I think, for everything. I just hate to see it be the first go-to, like hormone replacement. I would rather have it be for people that are really trying, they're really struggling, they know the risks, and now they're willing to use it in order to improve, especially type 2 diabetes, right? Or pre-diabetes, because so many people that are overweight then are much more prone to becoming diabetic, which then can lead to heart disease and many other issues. And of course, I don't want to see that. So I want to help people however possible.
I appreciate it. And I love your perspective. And like I said, the deep dive you always do on all the research. So where should I direct people to find you, the podcast? I'll put all the links in the show notes over at thegoodlifecoach.com, but give us the direct handles.
So my podcast is The Cabral Concept and my book is The Rain Barrel Effect. And then everything can be found right at stephencabral.com and it's Stephen with the PH. So the podcast is there, the book, all the different labs we spoke about. And I'm probably most active on Instagram and happy to help people in any way I can.
And that's what you do. And it's just such a pleasure sitting with you for the third time. Thank you for your time today. I love your heart and generous spirit and your just commitment to teaching. It's really a part of your path. And so it's so lovely seeing you out there on doing your shows and all these other big shows now. I've been seeing you out there and it just makes me happy. And I'm so grateful for your time today.
Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Hey, friend, I have one request before we sign off today. If you've gained any value from any of the interviews that you've tuned into, would you take just 1 minute and leave a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts? It's actually how more women can find the show, and I want to continue growing a community of women who are loving themselves and living full on. So thank you for all of your support, and I look forward to being back with you next week. Bye for now.
This podcast is presented for entertainment and educational purposes only. Any information provided is not intended to be a substitute for medical, mental health, or other professional advice. Seek out your trusted healthcare provider or other qualified professional for all matters dealing with your health and well-being. Any opinions or information provided by a guest are their own and not those of Michelle Lamoureux or the company.